Sometimes it takes an artist to prompt us to look at the world around us with a renewed appreciation for the beauty of this earth. Coming up today on Travel with Rick Steves, we'll hear about a few of the exciting site-specific art installations that dot the USA. And a veteran road tripper helps us explore the many sacred corners of one of the most visually distinctive of the 50 states, New Mexico. Let's start with an update on preserving important sites in Latin America with the head of projects at the World Monuments Fund for the entire Spanish and Portuguese-speaking world. Norma Barbacci is here to update us on endangered sites in Latin America and Iberia that have been added to the WMF's biannual watch list. Norma, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you've got a pretty big beat. You're covering all of the Spanish-speaking and Portuguese-speaking world. Is that basically what it is, Latin America and Iberia?
Yeah, it's pretty much everything between Mexico and Easter Island and Spain and Portugal.
And there's been over a dozen sites on the latest 2014 list that are from Latin America. What are some of the most striking and urgent sites on the list? They're all important, of course, but which are a couple that you'd like to mention that are closest to your heart?
Well, there are many. I mean, it's really hard for me to pick favorites, but I'm from Peru, and I'm going to start mentioning a few sites from Peru.
Okay.
Just because of that. We have Chan Chan, which is a World Heritage Site in the north of Peru. And that, is particularly interesting, not necessarily because of the threats within the site itself, which has this group of threats, but it's actually because of the threats that are affecting the buffer zone, which is the space that surrounds the protected area and is between the city of Trujillo and Chan Chan. And we picked that site because we thought it could open up a discussion about, you know, what a buffer zone is and should be, not just for this site, but for many other World Heritage sites.
So why would you need a buffer zone? Why is a buffer zone important?
It's a zone that sometimes is allotted. It permits certain types of development, certain types of uses that are not strictly protected as it would be within the World Heritage Site. We have several sites in Spain, sort of regressing, that had a buffer zone that was being protected and respected, but some of the developments that were proposed within those zones were greatly affecting the city, they say the historic city, to be protected, like
so
in
basically,
the case of Seville.
You've got a very historic part of Seville that needs to be protected. Which part would you
That's
be talking
correct.
About there?
The historic center of Seville, it's actually being built a tower that actually competes with
I've
La Giralda.
I've heard about that. It's a big bank tower or something. Now,
there
is a very good case where you have a heart for the heritage and the culture, and somebody else has a heart for getting a financial return on the real estate that they own.
Right.
This is a battle royale here, and it doesn't take a lot of money to stand up against those money interests.
It was really difficult, and in fact, I think we kind of lost that battle. And it wasn't just us. It was many, many groups around the world that were actually advocating for stopping the construction, including the UNESCO World Heritage Center.
Yeah. I was just in Sevilla. I was just in Sevilla, Norma, and people were mourning.
Yeah.
They were just in a state of shock because they've lost the integrity of their skyline, of their history and their heritage, because somebody was able to get the permission to build a skyscraper right in the middle of it all.
Exactly. And we knew of alternatives that could have alleviated that problem without limiting development. We're definitely not against development.
Right. There's just sensitive development
is a
nice option. Talk about Barcelona. Parc Güell. Everybody who goes to Barcelona loves Antonio Gaudí. Parc Güell is a beautiful
These are
site.
Actually the Güell pavilions. So there are actually two pavilions there. One is a stable and the other one is a gatekeeper's lodge that were built for Güell, for the same patron. And actually, those are part of the university. They belong to the University of Barcelona at this point. Part of this nomination is actually we would like to help them, you know, carry out some of the conservation activities, but also help them develop more like a tourism development plan. So to make them a little bit more accessible.
There's a case where tourism can be harnessed as a positive, a positive force and help them possibly renovate the building so that it can survive into the next century. But this is a Gaudi.
It's
an example of Gaudi architecture, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's actually, there's several others that are part of what we could call, you know, a hidden Gaudi. And we would like to sort of bring those up to, you know.
That's a beautiful thing.
Public knowledge,
Norma Barbacci is helping us connect with Latin America, Spain, and Portugal right now on Travel with Rick Steves. She oversees preservation projects in that region for the World Monuments Fund. Their website is wmf.org. Norma, I was fascinated to read about the work you're doing in Coimbra, in Portugal, with the university library there. It's such a fragile building, and I remember as a tourist going in there, and they were trying to protect the humidity and keep all the crowds from messing things up, but it was pretty ramshackle and pretty sloppy the way it was being guarded and protected. I remember the guard had a giant key and he opened the door and he let just piles of people in. How do you recognize precious sites like this? And then what is your hope in the case of the library?
Well, in this case, as you mentioned correctly, water infiltration, humidity are tremendous threats to, you know, ancient and precious books. In the case of the library, what we're hoping for is to be able to support an environmental control project. We are collaborating with the University of Coimbra, and we're hoping to be able to, you know, raise funds for such a project. You know, if we are able to raise funds, we would support a technical project and also an implementation phase, which would actually apply some of these recommendations.
Spain and Portugal, where you work, are relatively wealthy countries, but when you work with poor countries in Latin America, how do they respond when an organization from New York City says you should put in humidity control? Is there sort of a challenge you have in getting countries that are in desperate economic straits to embrace the values that you see in protecting their endangered sites?
Yes, in some cases, there might be a little bit of pushback, thinking that we are sort of imposing our views, you know, within our local community. But for the most part, I think we're pretty good at trying to convince them and demonstrating that protecting some of this heritage is actually an economic vehicle for development. And especially around my beat, some of these sites are actually probably the only way out of the terrible poverty that some of these communities face. So we try to develop sites to provide an economic resource for the local communities, as well as obviously defending their identity and
you know, that's
and their memory.
That's interesting, because I was in Costa Rica recently, and there, clearly, the way they've taken care of their environment is good for their economy, because it's a very popular destination for tourists who enjoy nature. And then if you go to Nicaragua and El Salvador, you can see they have more challenges in this regard. And would that be something that the World Monuments Fund would become involved in?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, you mentioned Costa Rica is actually a very different example from the rest of Central America. We have several projects in Guatemala, for example, where lack of resources and some of the increasing violence are actually making any kind of, you know, projects there a little bit, you know, more complicated, and also is diminishing tourism, which in such cases would be a good resource to generate, funds and resources for the conservation projects.
Norma, do you see tourism as generally a positive thing or a negative thing for these sites of great importance from a heritage point of view?
Tourism could go both ways. You are very familiar with the case of, you know, cruise tourism in Venice, which could be a really serious threat. But on the same hand, cruise tourism for the site of Quiriguá in Guatemala is actually a very good thing. They look forward to having tourists from the cruise ships come and pay the fee so they can have more resources for the proper care of this Maya site, which is actually quite a beautiful place. So, yes, tourism could be, you know, if it's not managed properly, could be a problem. But if it is managed properly, and especially if some of these tourism dollars actually revert to the local communities and in particularly also to the site itself, then it could be a very good thing.
So that's the challenge, is to capitalize on tourism, but do it thoughtfully in a way that's good for the maintenance of the sites of importance to their local heritage. You know, it is so inspirational to think of the work that the World Monuments Fund does. And I know you've put long hours and years into this. With all your work and your commitment to this issue, what is an example of a triumph that the World Monuments Fund has enjoyed that makes your work particularly gratifying?
Well, I'm going to have to mention a recent watch site, which is the Ruta de la Amistad, which is a 1968 site in Mexico City. It's a sculptural group that was created for the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City. And it was listed on the 2012 watch list. And since then, we were able to, raise some funds, but then also help the local nominator, which is a private trust, to actually complete not only the restoration of the individual sculptures, their public sculptures, but also their relocation within a reconfigured route. And besides the actual recovery of these pretty famous sculptures, including some by Alexander Calder, they also created a community program. The Mexico City residents had forgotten about Ruta de la Amistad. And now they are sort of like rediscovering this new site, which is something that they some of them never knew they had. And it was actually internationally worthwhile. So that's something we're kind of proud of.
That sounds like a good example of what the World Monuments Fund can accomplish.
Yeah, that's a good one. And another one is a site, is the San Pedro de Andahuaylillas Church and Town in Peru. It's just outside of Cusco. We started the project with the restoration of the church, which is a beautiful Baroque church considered the Sistine Chapel of America. But also, we're proud of that project because it also included the protection of the entire town as a historic center, as well as a training program for youth that now this 11 or 12 young people are actually quite dedicated to the protection of Andahuaylillas. And they decided they're not going to move to the big city. They're actually going to stay and use their talent to actually protect the historic town, the church.
Wow.
And they have become great advocates for this within their communities and the surrounding areas.
You know, that's a great partnership between a global organization like the World Monuments Fund based in New York and local people who really understand the value of their local heritage. Norma Barbacci, thank you so much for sharing with us the work of the World Monuments Fund. And to learn more, we can go to WMF.org. Best wishes with your work, Norma.
Thank you.
While all those Latin drums are clopping like a jumping jack, I'm hopping without stopping. Olé, South America, take it away.
In just a bit, we'll hear how the Spanish heritage of New Mexico is an important part of the scene there today, where roadside crosses, shrines, and adobe churches are among the many sacred sites that are woven into the desert landscape. Up next, we'll explore the power of site-specific outdoor art to transform how you look at the world around you. We're at 877-333-7425. It's Travel with Rick Steves.